Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Need expert advice on your family's health? Speak to us today at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network. Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Discover a healthcare team that's always here for you at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Good morning. You're very welcome to the show. And I think the message you would get reading the Sunday papers today is kind of be careful what you wish for. Like, we went on and on about, in kind of innocent times 6 months ago, about how we need to have a conversation about migration. Well, we are having one of a sort, and it is absolutely poisonous on the evidence of today's papers and this week. And not forgetting that at its heart are what Shane Ross calls in his column powerless pawns, and these are the people themselves. So the Irish Daily Mail is focusing on the kind of political aspect of this week. Ministers turn on each other over migrants. So a flurry of briefing there, and ministers lining up to lambaste Simon Harris and Helen McEntee on one hand, Harris's backers turning on Micheál Martin, according to John Lee there. The Sunday Times, they're saying far-right activists face arrest under anti-terror laws. So they're saying Section 7 of the Offences Against the State Act 1939 protects the cabinet, judiciary and legislature from acts of intimidation outside normal political protests. Now they tell us. The Sunday Independent have a poll, and the headline they take out of it is checks at border for migrants backed by 50%. And we'll come back to that poll in more detail. The Business Post has an exclusive. This is the boss of Amazon, and he is warning that if we don't allow more data centres, he has an interesting point that the pipeline of foreign direct investment will be directed away from Ireland. But, and this sounds like common sense, if he says if it gets redirected somewhere else and it prospers, it'll be very difficult to get it back. And he's probably right. The Sunday World is leading on that awful attack on three women in Dundalk on Friday afternoon. The Mirror is leading on Bambi's hospital horror. That's Ireland's Eurovision hopes have been thrown into doubt after singer Bambi Tug was rushed to hospital in Sweden with suspected food poisoning. And The Sun is leading with Elf Will buys into Leeds. So Elf movie star Will Ferrell has bought a large stake in Leeds United after falling in love with English football. That seems to be a bit of a trend now. It's the new Hollywood hobby is to buy into an English soccer team. Okay, our panel today, Louise Bayliss is the founder of single parent organisation Spark and a campaign coordinator of Focus Ireland. Pat Leahy is political editor at the Irish Times. Brendan Kelly is a consultant psychiatrist and professor of psychiatry at Trinity College Dublin. And Brenda Power is a columnist with the Irish Daily Mail and the Sunday Times, and indeed a barrister. Good morning, everybody, and thank you for coming in on a bank holiday weekend for this massive row of newspapers. Brenda, will we start with the front of the Mail on Sunday, ministers turning on each other?
Yeah, I mean, the mess that the immigration situation has descended into over the past week has been unprecedented. And as the Mail is reporting, the ministers are now blaming each other, and it's in between integration and justice and who has handled it well and whether particular statements should have been made. I mean, the warning signs that this was about to go the way that it has have been there for some time. It cannot have escaped this government's attention that as soon as the mention of Rwanda entered into the debate in the UK, that the natural instinct of anybody looking for asylum there would be to come here. So that's been something that has clearly been flagged up for some time.
They might stop going to the UK.
Or just come straight here.
Okay.
I mean, it just seems to me that this is... I reckon there are two causes to this, to the situation that we're in at the moment, Brendan. First of all, is that tweet that Roderick O'Gorman put out 2 years ago, inviting. He says he wasn't inviting, but in eight languages he said, if you come to this country, you will have your own front door within 4 months. Now, that tweet, as far as I can see, is still up. In fairness to him, at the time, there was an expected influx of up to 3,000 a year refugees, 3,000 a year. Then the following
when
year...
When did he put this out?
2021, February 2021. And among the languages that he tweeted in were Albanian and Georgian, two designated safe countries. But anyway, the following year, then, of course, the war broke out in Ukraine. And what we did then... We outbid basically every other country in Europe for Ukrainian refugees. We doubled the offer. The next best offer was the German offer, which was €112 a week. We said, come to Ireland, you get 220 as well as all the other supports. So that led to an arrival
people,
of...
People wanted, people but hang wanted on a second, to do it at the
100,000.
Time,
we yeah, because we thought it would be a six-week war and we'd come out looking like the best boys in Europe. That led to an influx of 100,000 people who needed to be accommodated and supported. That was 30 years worth of the projections that existed in 2021. So we've made, you know, I hate the phrase perfect storm, but all of these factors have now conflated to give us a situation where you have people sleeping on the streets.
Okay. Or you could say, an unprecedented war on the mainland of Europe and increased migration all over the world.
Increased migration, of course. Yeah, but I mean, we certainly have taken in more than we can handle. I think that's pretty demonstrable.
Pat, you also picked that piece. I mean, where are we at after the week in politics, so to speak?
So I think it's the week was a demonstration of how the issue of immigration is now front and centre in our politics. And, you know, we can argue about how we got here, but we are where we are, so to speak. And I think that issue will remain front and centre in our politics for the foreseeable future. And lots of the things that we saw during the week and that we have evidence for in opinion polls today, I know we'll come on to talk about that in a few minutes, Brendan, but they are a direct result, in many respects, a foreseeable result of plonking this issue front and centre in our politics. There's a lot of criticism across all the papers today and some of them yesterday about the government's handling of a couple of issues during the week. The first one was this kind of confected row with the British over the Rwanda policy. And that allowed the government...
Was it confected or was it stumbled into by a combination of the Minister for Justice saying the 80% and then the Taoiseach equating, connecting that to Rwanda?
I think it was a mixture of both. I think it may have initially been stumbled into, but then it was seized on by both sides to talk tough about each other. It was an enormous gift, I think, to Rishi Sunak, who is politically on a sinking ship and will grab at any lifeline that he can. But it also enabled the Taoiseach and the Taoiseach to talk tough in respect of the British position. And that's often good politics for an Irish Taoiseach to do.
How
but
does,
I'm not sure
how
it's...
How do they calm all this down now, though?
I mean, I think that the fact that you were in an election week in the UK that has now passed, that will have its own calming effect. But there's a general election coming up in the UK in which immigration will be, illegal immigration will be a huge issue. So I don't think that this spat is going to go away or this difference
David
is going to go away.
David Davenport says in the Sunday Indo today, he calls the relationship between Ireland and Britain now is kind of, is transactional, he says, and will remain that way for the time being, that there's no warmth there, essentially.
I don't know about that entirely. There's a whole heap of goodwill amongst lots of people on both sides. But what is the complicating factor in all that is that they, and ultimately the common travel area will have to be jointly managed by both governments. The difficulty now is that politics, and specifically the politics of immigration, is intervening to drive a wedge between the between the two governments. And it is, as we saw during the week, combustible. Where the government has erred, I think, this week is not thinking through what it is doing. So Simon Harris and Helen McEntee said that they would introduce emergency legislation immediately, so the government was immediately seen to be doing something. But the British are saying that even after this emergency legislation, is they're not going to accept the retransfer of migrants back to the UK. So the government will be in a position within a few weeks where it has its emergency legislation on the statute books, but is still not in a position to send migrants back to the UK because the British government won't accept
them. I'll come back to you, Brenda. I just want to bring the others in a bit. Louise, this notion of like we won't take them back in their years now and all this, and a lot of people pointing out that, you know, these are people. They're people like us.
Yeah.
You picked a piece in the Sunday Times today, Asylum Seekers Tell of Terrible Conditions on Canal Bank.
Yeah, I think, you know, in this debate, and it's a heated debate, and there obviously is a debate we need to have about how to manage migration, but we cannot forget our humanity in this, and we have to remember that each person we're talking about has come from, not everybody has come from war-torn strife, but certainly the Ukrainians have, and certainly a lot of the refugees who are sleeping on the streets. And in that article in the Sunday Times, a man spoke about feeling suicidal, and I can absolutely understand how he can, and I think we talk about the impact on what it's having on our city and what it's having on our services, and absolutely there are concerns there. You know, I work in Focus Ireland, it's a homeless organisation, we see the numbers going back, we understand capacity, and all of that has to be discussed, but we can only discuss it in a frame where we remember these are people, they're not animals, they're not a problem to be solved, they have souls, they have hearts, they're human, and we have to remember that in the debate. And I think another article in the Irish Examiner during the week, Paul Hosford wrote a really strong article about the silent minority, the loud minority are really framing this debate around migration, and that most Irish people are decent. There are concerns that need to be addressed, absolutely. There are provisions that need to be made. But most Irish people look in the soul of somebody and want to help. That's, as a nation, who we generally are. And even in the Sky News commissioned report that was issued this week, it showed that a lot of the formerly known as Twitter, tweets were all about about Newtown Mount Kennedy. Over 50% of them came from outside Ireland. They were from America.
So people's worst natures are being whipped
And that only 28% of the tweets about Newtown Mount Kennedy were based in Ireland. I think we need to get back, and I think those of us who believe in the humanity and really do not like what's happening to our country, do not like this far-right rhetoric come in, we need to stand up. And I'll be honest, they are so loud and they are so vocal that you're afraid to put your head above the parapet. But I'm putting my head above the parapet here, and they do not represent me, and they do not represent the people I want to work with and want to work for, or the society I want. I want to remember humanity.
Yeah, I think it's happening all of us that we're forgetting humanity. You get caught up in the arguments about it and everything. I drove down this morning to have a look at the Grand Canal just to see the situation, and like, I don't want to be white man's tears about it now, right? But there was a guy standing there brushing his teeth. And just in a second, you thought, OK, I could be him, he could be me. That guy has the same expectations of life as I had. And then I realised, you forget all that in all of this. Brendan, you're working with a lot of these people, aren't you?
Yes, well, I work in the health system, which is utterly reliant on people who have come from outside of Ireland to work in the health system in various healthcare posts. And one of the things we do is provide healthcare to lots of people who are, you know, seeking asylum in Ireland, international protection and so forth. And the challenges they face are extraordinary. They're enormous. So we see people with very complex mental health needs, which have been amplified by their experiences in their home countries, their experiences as they travel, and on occasion, their experiences here. So these are indeed very, very human stories, very, very tragic stories, many of them. But we underestimate the strength and the resilience and courage of many of these people much of the time, and supporting them and finding a way to tap into that. I think what happened during the week was a regrettable intersection of, you know, social media, politics with elections left, right and centre, and everything getting amplified about a particular cohort of people. The solution is probably far simpler and more prosaic, and to do with the International Protection Office being better resourced, expanded further than it already is, processing the routine cases quicker and better in order to, you know, reduce the pressure on these kinds of cases. But these are very, very human stories. And Alison O'Connor writes very, very well about this in the Sunday Times today. And she says that the strong voices stressing the positives in immigration and taking a humane approach seem only to be whispering. And this is, of course, because of the cacophony of hate that is being outpoured on social media. But these are very much human stories, as you saw this morning.
Yeah. And Brenda, look, notwithstanding that they are all human beings, there is still a problem to be solved here. You wanted to come back in.
Well, I wanted to come back in on the point that Pat was making there about the emergency legislation that we're now being told will address this loophole in respect of the UK not being a safe country when it comes to the Rwandan deportations. That's EU law. It's nothing that we can address here, as far as I can see. And I saw Michael McDougall yesterday warning the same thing, saying that even if we do amend this legislation, first of all, it'll be challenged to the Supreme Court, it'll be challenged to Strasbourg. That's point one. But secondly, I mean, why this is largely, I would say, a confected row is because we hadn't actually sent anybody back under this legislation. That's, you know, what makes it all such a bottle of smoke, because the reality is, I think 181 people were accepted back to the UK under this legislation. Nobody was sent. We agreed to take back, I think, 1,000 from the UK, or at least we agreed to take back from the UK. Again, I can't remember how many. One was sent back. So we're talking about, you know, legislation that was not being enforced anyway. But the other point I wanted to make was, and Louise is absolutely right, I mean, you know, when you saw these people on the streets, your heart would have to go out to them. And my own, I suppose, conclusion looking at the scenes along Mount Street over the past 6 months or more was that this was basically our poor man's Rwanda, if you like. That this was the way, this was what the Irish government wanted to go out on the grapevine in the asylum seeking community. Look what will happen to you if you come to Ireland. You don't want to go there.
Okay.
And it was only when the international film crew started to arrive last week after this bat blew up that suddenly there was an urgency in addressing it.
Pat, there's lots of aspects to this. I want to come back to some other aspects of it in a minute. But Colin Murphy has a piece in the Sunday Indo, "Let's Keep Calm and Remain Sane Over Immigration. This is Ireland." And one point he's making is that, like, a lot of this is about the narrative rather than the numbers. And the narrative is completely out of control at the moment, isn't it?
Yeah, and Colin Murphy makes the point in that piece. He says that, you know, Mount Street effectively became the Irish government's small boats thing, where it was seen to have to do something about it. And I don't think that many people would have objected to what happened on Wednesday, which was the clearing of the tents and the transfer of people to more suitable accommodation where there are better facilities. The problem was, just like with the legislation, but this is the point, just like with the legislation, nobody seems to have thought through what was going to happen on Thursday and on Friday. So, you know, the government's action worked on Wednesday, but by the time we get to the end of the week, you're back to almost square one, except in a slightly different place. And now we have the encampment down beside the canal, which is not a suitable place for anybody to be living. I used to live near the canal many years ago, and the place is full of rats. You know, there's people walking home after a night out and so forth. And, you know, the problem is clearly one of accommodation, but there is also a policy problem. The general policy framework for asylum and for international protection that was agreed decades and decades ago is predicated on a relatively small amount of movements. And people are given guarantees of sanctuary and so forth, as they should be, but that is done on the basis that there will be a small number of movements. We had up to relatively recently, we had a couple of thousand people coming here, and we can deal with that. The problem is we need a completely different system to deal with the 20,000 that Roderick O'Gorman says is now going to be the new norm. And beyond that, if that becomes the new norm, then, you know, as climate change takes hold in the world, as conflicts proliferate, do we then end up a few years later with 40,000 or 50,000, and how do we deal with that? So this conversation, for better or worse, is open now and is in the middle of politics. And, you know, as you know, you and many of your listeners will know, the middle of politics is not necessarily the most restrained place to have a productive conversation about it.
The Sunday Times editorial is suggesting that perhaps we need a referendum on the immigration pact, which we're going to sign up to, which will basically share the burden of immigration amongst all European countries. And that is the reason that Roderick O'Gorman has said that we can expect 15,000 to 20,000 refugees arriving per annum.
Nobody will thank anyone for a referendum. Was it Brenda from Bristol said we've had enough politics for now? I think that could be the attitude to referendums.
But I mean, you know, the point is that consultation with the public, and I know that they've been talking about COVID-style communications. I presume that'll mean a press conference once a week. But that communication and consultation is going to be essential going forward.
I think if the government is unwilling to have a referendum on the International Patent Court, I don't think it's going to dip its toe in a referendum on immigration.
Patents could be too divisive, Louise, there's another aspect to this then, the front of the Sunday Times today. So we saw that bomb threat to Helen McEntee last week, and then we saw another protest.
Simon Harris says correctly,
it's not protest, it's harassment. So the front of the Sunday Times, far-right activists face arrest under anti-terror laws, you picked.
Yeah, I did, because something has to be done. I mean, I've been involved. I am a protester. Hands up, I've protested. My daughter has been gone to boogies. We've gone up and down outside Leinster House when I've been unhappy with the changes or whatever. So I'm a protester and I totally understand the concept of protest. But what has been going on has not been protesting. Going outside politicians' houses, going outside with balaclavas, frightening people in the streets, you know, cameras being forced into people's faces. It is not the hallmark of a democracy. We may not like aspects of what's going on with any government thing, and that's okay to protest against, but what has been happening has been just that too much, and it's too far, and it is intimidating for democracy. And also what I think about it is any normal, sane, rational person would think twice before putting themselves up for an election. Yeah. You know, that is the fear that you would have people who are moderate, who are, you know, intelligent or sane or rational, will not go for election, because why would they, to be bombarded with that? So I think we do need to go through something, and we've been quite tolerant of far-right activists, and I think it's now time to pull the plug and go, no, enough is enough.
And it seems to be the same people, basically. They all seem, they keep saying they were linked to other similar protests. Brendan Kelly, as a psychiatrist, and you wrote a book about our resilience out of the pandemic and everything. Is there something gone amiss here? Is it since the pandemic gone amiss in our discourse, in our culture, in the way we are with each other? Is there a toxicity there? Or?
Yeah, there's something far more unsettled for sure. And there is a much quicker resort to hate and to very, very difficult rhetoric. And this is reflected all over the place, particularly the personalization of protests, protesting against politicians and at their homes rather than against their policies. It's hard to know to what extent it's due to the pandemic or not. Certainly the pandemic changed so many aspects of how we think about each other, how we behave, how we feel. But it also showed a certain amount of strength. And I think we can draw from our experience of the pandemic. There was a lot of coming together. There was a lot of mutual support. But it did appear to disappear in a finger snap when the pandemic ended. And we cannot live in a constant state of crisis. So moving to COVID-style communications, for example, in relation to the immigration issue, would be like living in a permanent crisis, a perma-crisis, rather than seeing this as a challenge which has parameters, which has solutions, maybe shifting the way the International Protection Office works, making certain changes to the incentives for protest, changes to legislation, and looking for solutions rather than simply running around screaming, panicked, and hurtling abuse at each other online and in person.
Even listening to you there is very calming. Brenda, I want to move on to more general politics and stuff, but could you just tell us briefly about John Mooney and the Sunday Times? Immigration is not a policing issue. Did you pick that?
Yes,
piece?
I did. Yeah. I'm sorry, I wasn't aware that this was the case.
Yeah, I'm confused. Are you?
Yeah, this is the story about the Gardaí,
yeah,
going up and stopping, intercepting.
Yes.
Public transport, basically.
Yes, checkpoints on the M1 to stop cars, minibuses and coaches that might be transporting migrants to Dublin.
Yeah.
They're saying it's intelligence led and focus on catching the middlemen, but public transport's routinely inspected for migrants, mm-hmm, but politically Gardaí must allow people to travel freely across the border to reflect government policy.
Yeah, I just wasn't aware. I must say that's John Mooney's story in the Sunday Times today. I wasn't aware of this. It's described as kind of shadow operations in the region. They're not anywhere near the border, but they are in Louth.
Yes.
They're in County Louth.
That border would be far away. This border is just small, yeah, kind small of thing. Yeah, it's not a border.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So obviously there has been an awareness for some time then of the transit.
Yeah, he mentioned this last week as well, actually. Yeah. Patty, does this not go against all the row we had this week about we will not be sending police to Donegal and Rishi Sunak of accusing us of sending police to the border.
I mean, talk about having your cake and eating it. So we insist on an open border and expanded, you know, considerable political and diplomatic muscle using the EU and our allies in the White House to ensure that this would be the case, and for which we are blamed by many Brexit supporting politicians in the UK. But now we see that actually, you know,
we're well able for a bit of cakeism ourselves.
But yeah, there seems to be, I mean, according to John Mooney's story, that, you know, there's lots of checks that take place, but not on the border. There might be just a little bit back, back from it.
Okay, now, the politics of all this, Pat, you alluded to the poll in the Sunday Indo earlier. So one of the things you picked out on this was the general support for checks on the border, Sinn Féin's supporters as well, and support for Rwanda.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose this is what I mean when I talk about, you know, the immigration question coming into, to play in our politics in a way that is not going to be put back in the box now. 50% of people back checks on the border. 40% of people are in favour of a regime to send, like the one in the UK, to send people back to Rwanda. And actually, I think that, and we've done lots of polling on this in the Irish Times as well, I actually think that the public in general is a good bit tougher on immigration than the political establishment and most of the political parties. But that's beginning to move. So you see, and it has been a fixture of political analysis for some time now, that Sinn Féin has been the party that is perhaps under most pressure on the immigration issue. And one of the reasons for that is that Sinn Féin supporters tend to be harder line than supporters of other parties on immigration. I mean, we've seen the rhetoric from Sinn Féin begun to toughen up in recent weeks. So I think it was about 5 or 6 weeks ago, I suddenly started to notice that every Sinn Féin statement from a spokesperson on the immigration issue was preceded by them saying, Sinn Féin is not in favour of open borders. Now, of course,
Meaning,
I think the message there, everybody is not in favour of open borders. There's some control over who comes into the country on the part of nearly everybody. But I think what they meant is that we are toughening up on this. And we also see that they've opposed committed to oppose in the Dáil the ratification of the EU migration pact. And we see in today's poll, in the Sunday Indo the Ireland Thinks poll, Kevin Cunningham's the pollster is drawing a connection between the toughening of that stance on the part of Sinn Féin and an increase for that party of 3 points in today's poll. Now, that's just one poll, and you would be unwise to read too much into one movement in one poll. But it is interesting nonetheless.
And most people regard that as being a toughening up, regard the migrant pact as being a toughening up of immigration.
It is certainly regarded as a toughening up right across Europe. That's correct.
Okay. But it will still lead to a greater influx of asylum seekers here, because we'll be obliged to take our share.
I think the government is arguing.
But the 20,000 is the current number.
That's where the 20,000 is coming from. But I mean, at the moment, the current figure is about 13,000, I think.
But it's on
the 20,000 is a projection of this year, the first few months.
Yeah.
The government is arguing that the migration pact will ultimately lead to because people will it'll be more easy to send people back to the country they first landed in, I think, is one part of it, and also, of course, we'll be able to pay other people to take migrants. Now, Pat, will you or will I run through the state of the parties in that poll now that we have invoked it? It's like when you say Beetlejuice, we have to then. Yeah,
I don't mind, Brendan. You can do it if you like. I'd be happy to do it.
Sinn Féin are at 29%, up 3. Fine Gael are at 19%, down 2. Fianna Fáil in this poll are 16%, unchanged. Social Democrats unchanged at 6. Green Party unchanged at 4. Aintu are down 1 at 3%. Labour is 3 at unchanged. Solidarity People Before Profit unchanged at 2. And Independence Other up 2 to 19. And we saw that kind of trend across a lot of the polls recently. The poll was conducted on May 2nd and 3rd. It was a sample size of 1,316 people, and there was a margin of error of plus or minus 2.8%. And now let me get my train of thought again. Louise, you picked an interesting piece in the Business Post, and people might have noticed this, that Sinn Féin went over speaking to business people in London, was it?
It was in the City of London, and it was hosted by this stockbrokers, Davy Stockbrokers. And it was an interesting thing because they spoke to 50 global investors, and the author of the piece wrote that he had seen the memo that was sent out by Davy Stockbrokers to the 50 global investors. And he said that they had jettisoned a lot of their extreme policies, that they had become more centrist, and that they were more like, I thought it was an interesting quote, more like Labour under Tony Blair than Labour under Jeremy Corbyn. So it definitely seemed like there was a move to get international globalists, investors to see Sinn Féin as a party that is going to allow investment in Ireland and not continuing as a left-wing party. So it was just a very interesting concept.
And as a person of the left yourself, do you think Sinn Féin are probably moving away from what your principles would be?
I think, to see some of the commentary about immigration is worrying. You know, they've always been a party that stood with, certainly in recent years, with people on the ground. And it seems that's a little bit on the populist side. And I would find that hard to justify as a left-wing party. I'm hoping that there may be motivation behind it, that they're thinking if we get more central, we'd be able to bring in left policies. But at the moment, I would be concerned that they are appealing to... I'm being very political.
Yeah, it's a Trojan horse there. Pat, this is a general move that people are noticing, Sinn Féin.
Yeah.
Kind of shaping up to be an acceptable party of government, but that means becoming more centrist, does it?
Yeah, we've been tracking this for a good while, and its economic policies, also on foreign policy and things like that. Sinn Féin has been tacking to the centre because that's where most of the votes are, and that's where most of the governing takes place. Now, the party will argue, of course, that it will be more distinctively left-wing than the alternative, and that's certainly true.
And we've heard this before, they seem to have kind of, I won't say calmed down, but they've pulled back on corporation tax or anything. 3% extra solidarity tax for people on over 140,000. That's not going to really upset anyone, is it? Like, it's not exactly the revolution, like, is it?
I mean, I'm tempted to say that it might upset some people, but I think you've seen this on foreign policy as well, and where previously the parties, I wrote a story about this last year, where previously the party's pledge had been that it would leave PESCO, the EU's defence cooperation arm, and that it would leave NATO's partnership for peace. The party now says, well, we look at individual individual projects on a case by case basis. I think what's been happening in Sinn Féin is interesting, particularly on the immigration stuff. And the immigration area was one of the areas where they have been squeezed, because now, notwithstanding the fact that you see them go up by 3 points in today's poll, the long-term trend, I mean, there's been two important things have happened in terms of party support since the last election. The first was the rise of Sinn Féin, and the second was the fall of Sinn Féin. You know, a year and a half ago or so, they were trending in the mid-30s, 36, 37% in some polls. Now they're back down to around about where they were at the last election, as I say, notwithstanding today's numbers, in the mid to late 20s.
And now, one of the independents taking a lot of that.
Yeah. So this is the support has flowed to the smaller parties, Social Democrats getting some of it, and to the independents, rather than back to Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael. And there's a sort of plague of all your houses sense amongst many voters at the moment. What was happening to Sinn Féin, I think, is that their populist wing, the left populist base of support that they had, was kind of in conflict with the new progressive voters. And the new progressive voters may not like the tougher stance on immigration, but the left populists love it. Yeah. And maybe that's part of the reason for the
I do think, Pat, though, your idea that some people will be unhappy about the 3%, none of those people would have been voting Sinn Féin anyway, so I don't think they're going to risk losing any voters?
Yeah, I mean, I did a piece about this yesterday. I spoke to a bunch of people in Sinn Féin about it during the week. And what one TD was telling me was that, you know, the people there's no position on immigration that we can adopt that will keep some of the extremes happy. And I think that's true. I think, yeah, largely
Aidan
speaking,
Regan has been writing a bit in the Sunday Business Post about this notion that he's across Europe, apparently, parties that try and tack to the right to do this, they potentially lose more voters than
centre-left parties. I spoke to him during the week about this, and he says that centre-left parties that go harder on immigration tend to lose votes.
I see that Chris Doherty saying in that piece, Louise, that you picked out, that it's not that they've shifted, it's that the government has come to meet them.
Okay, I'm glad you clarified that, that it all makes sense now. Okay, we'll take a break. Louise Bayliss, Pat Leahy, Brendan Kelly and Brenda Power staying with us.
Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1. Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Need expert advice on your family's health? Speak to us today at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network. Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1.
Welcome back. Louise Bayliss, Pat Leahy, Brendan Kelly and Brenda Power still with us. Just a couple of texts before we move on. Your panel just don't get it. Immigration's linked to the housing crisis. If more people come here, more people have to compete for resources. It's not the far right bogeyman. Rents and prices in this country are crazy at the moment. People just don't see a future. Someone else says, well said, Brenda Power. She speaks for so many of us, silent majority. Whereas on the other hand, I'm so glad Louise has called out these far right fascists, says someone else. They do not speak for me. All you in the media and the government have to start to stand up and call them out. Okay. So we come on to the protests in Trinity College this weekend. Louise, you picked Niamh Horan's piece in Sunday Indo, Trinity students risk expulsion over Gaza.
Yeah. I was looking at this during the week, and while it's now being pitched as a protest against Gaza, similar to the universities in Columbia and University and other universities in America, it started earlier in the week. On the 29th of April, there was an email issued by the student union, apparently to Linda Doyle, the provost, saying, threatening that if an agenda item wasn't taken off their meeting the next day, which was about an increase in postgraduate fees, that they would threaten the reputation and the financial implications of the college.
Okay. She then I don't know about that.
No, but she sent out an sent out an email. I've seen the email, and she very clearly said, you know, we support protests, but we will not be blackmailed into this. Now, I think that was very fair of her. I don't agree with a 214,000 fine for a students' union protesting. I mean, the art of protesting has to be supported, and students all over the country will, you know, are entitled to protest. The 214,000, I think, was inflammatory, and then obviously led to the encampment on Friday. And
while you think the threat of a fine, which was, I think, to compensate for money lost by Trinity by cut off access to the Book of Kells, you think that might have upped the ante?
I think it escalated then, and it's now you know. And I do think that it's not just it's obviously there is people there because of Gaza, but there were people already protesting about the increase in fees and other rights in Trinity College. But I also think there was a report done by the National Youth Council 2 weeks ago, and it talked about the state of people.
It was very stark, wasn't it?
It was very stark. 18 to 29 year olds, their level of despair, their level of hope for the future, where they believed they'd never be able to own a house. They couldn't see the future. There was this lack of intergenerational solidarity where people who, you know, and I'll put myself in that category. I bought my own house at 26 and I thought I was late getting to the table, you know, and nobody at 26 can realistically do that. So there is all of this malaise that's there, and obviously it's going to lead to protest. I think older people who need to show solidarity to young people, and fining the students 214,000 for protesting was wrong.
Brenda, students protest, that's what they do. I mean, it surprises such a big story because it's been going on all the time. We all did it.
Well, I think what's different about this is that it does appear to be piggybacking on the campus protests in the United States, which have been described, whether we agree with it or not, as Woodstock for anti-Semites, because Jewish students have been targeted particularly, and college property has been damaged. And there's a terrific piece in the Sunday Times Online edition by Camilla Long, completely letting the air out of that whole, which he calls performative, narcissistic, faux indignation, centering on this particular Columbia student who came out of the room that they're occupying, the college building that they're occupying in Colombia, and demanded humanitarian aid because they're not being having food.
Their
food is not being sent into them, and can we not at least have a drink of water? Because obviously they couldn't be expected to drink the tap water that is available in that particular building. They want Evian. She says, not only is it silly and incredibly difficult to understand how somebody clever enough to get into such a prestigious university could be that dumb, but also that it undermines their cause. If you call looking for pizzas to be delivered to the campus you're occupying humanitarian aid, then you are completely undermining the cause with which you're claiming solidarity.
So, yeah, but you'll have one idiot everywhere, like, in fairness.
Brendan, she was a spokesperson idiot.
Okay, yeah, there's a lot of idiot spokespeople as well, trust me. Brendan Kelly, so you are a professor of psychiatry at Trinity, is one of your monikers, and you don't speak for Trinity today or anything.
No.
Where do you...
No, I don't.
All this.
I don't speak for Trinity today, or indeed ever. But I do work at Trinity, and I'm what I'm going to do now is I'm going to stand up for both the students and for Trinity here, which is I do believe the students.
I'll enjoy watching this.
Get off the fence.
No, honestly, I firmly believe the students' protest is a heartfelt, deeply rooted in deep conviction regarding Gaza, and they have the right to protest the way that they do, particularly if it is a peaceful protest. And if it does not disrupt the activity of the university, ideally, there are rules governing this kind of thing. But they do have the right to protest, and I do believe it is a heartfelt protest. On the other hand, the response of Trinity is to say that Trinity has responsibilities to all of its students, be they no matter what country they're from, be they from Palestine, be they from Israel, and a responsibility to run a university and to provide the services that a university provides. And I think the responses of Trinity Central to the protest have been within what is reasonable for them, and I believe the protest to date is within what is reasonable for protest. I'm not entirely certain how it will work out or work its way through.
Do you think it's reasonable enough, the blocking off access to the Book of Kells? Is it?
No, I would prefer to see if that there wasn't blocking of what are essentially public communities and part of Ireland's discourse with the world, which is the Book of Kells. However, most protests around the world, they do push at the edges of the rules. That's often how they have their impact. I'm not a protester myself, particularly never have been. I believe there are better ways to effect change. But I have faith in both the staff of Trinity and indeed the provost and what I regard as a proportionate response. And I also have faith in the students of Trinity, who are very motivated, full of convictions and very, very smart
like
young people.
That was like an Oscar speech. thanking everybody on all sides. So you have faith in everybody. And Pat, they are getting results because the province did during the week commit to looking at their, is it called the endowment portfolio, and looking at companies that are blacklisted by the UN and in revisiting that.
Yeah, whether that will be enough for them or not is another matter. I mean, I think, there's particularly, amongst middle-aged people like myself, there's a tendency to say, look at these students, should we all did it? Let's not take them too seriously. But actually, I think we should take them. I think we should take them seriously. I've no doubt about their sincerity and their commitment, as Brendan said. That doesn't, of course, mean that they're right. Some of the most committed and sincere people can also be some of the most wrong people about various things. And I wonder where their activism is on, where their calls for boycott and divestment and sanctions on China or on Saudi Arabia or on Russia or Cuba or other human rights violators. And I wonder why it is only Israel, notwithstanding the fact that Israel's behaviour in Gaza for many months now, I think, has been completely indefensible. But I wonder why it is only Israel that attracts such
So
protests.
That they would say that is whataboutery. But equally, like, China has these magnificent installations and buildings and institutes and universities all over the place, doesn't it?
And the background to that is a piece that I know is in the Business Post today about the general funding crisis in universities. And I suppose that's a background to it as well. And one final point on it, I would wonder what are their concerns? What are the students' concerns about the minority of students in Trinity from a Jewish background?
Okay, well, we would hope that they're being respectful of those people. Brenda, The RTE is back in the headlines, kind of. The front page of the Sunday Times, Claire Scott is saying RTE set to overhaul contracts for its stars.
Yes, Brendan.
They're making us civil servants.
Do you want to comment on that yourself?
My mother would be so proud.
Finally.
Yeah. yes. Overall contracts. I think the proposal is to benchmark them against the public service. What level do you reckon you'd be?
It won't be for me to say. I'm sure there will be a committee set up that will assess these things.
Okay. I'd actually nicely dodged there. The other proposal, of course, relates to the very contentious issue of the licence fee. And the proposal there seems to be a sort of hybrid approach, which is to reduce it and also to have it collected by the revenue. I don't see the point of that. I don't think it's the level of the fee that people are objecting to. It's the principle of the fee. So €160 is not outside the reach of most people a year, given that there are obviously exemptions for people who genuinely can't afford it. But I would have thought either up it and have it collected by the revenue or drop it altogether and have it directly funded from the revenue, from taxes.
Yeah. I think the hybrid model that's emerging, Pat?
That's the direction, as I understand it, that is the direction of travel. Within government.
To keep everybody happy on
it's both sides.
It's a compromise.
Okay. It's a compromise. So it delivers, it doesn't abolish the licence fee entirely. It gives RTE a higher level of funding. It makes it, puts it on a sustainable funding footing, and it gives people a cut in the amount that they have to pay every year. Crucially, it will be collected by the revenue commissioners, although I don't think the revenue commissioners are exactly agog at this idea. But if it's collected by the revenue commissioners, then you will get a much higher level of observation of the fee. And that in turn delivers more revenues. I think this hasn't been decided within government yet. My understanding is that that's not going to happen for several weeks yet, but it's pretty clear that this is the direction of travel.
It'll be after the local and Europeans, yeah.
Probably into, late June, maybe as far as July.
Okay. And the station is also being brought under the auspices of the Controller and Auditor General, which it had been up to a few years ago, and that's to be returned. I see a report in the Irish Times yesterday saying that RTE is to be told to accept 76 recommendations from an expert committee on governance, culture, oversight, disclosure of expenditure and hospitality and travel. I think the Sunday Indo has a story today about millions spent on bonuses for staff and top-ups, and it does seem as if it's a bit of a Wild West financially.
Yeah, and I think there is, in fairness, a labyrinthine kind of pay structure for some people who act up in various ways and everything, and that's being, I think that's being cleared up anyway at the moment. There's no great juicy leaks like flip-flops from any of these reports, really. It's all getting very kind of civilised and high-minded now, isn't it?
I think, believe it or not, we may be at the beginning of the end of the RTE story, which we will all be immensely
Well, can I jump in there for a minute and say, in the interest of national mental health, please may we be at the beginning of the end of the RTE story at this point. I'm very keen to see it sorted out and done with for everyone's peace of mind.
Okay. Before we take a break, I'm suddenly noticing a flurry of texts around Trinity, but a lot of people saying, how did it come about that Trinity's allowed to possess and monetize the Book of Kells? It's not part of the national culture of the state. I'm totally backing the students in Trinity, says another texter. Also, the Book of Kells should be placed in the National Gallery. It's a national treasure, not a cash cow. On the other hand, I agree with the students' right to protest. However, they should respect the Book of Kells.
Yeah.
Someone else says, it's outrageous, Brenda, to ridicule the students in Colombia for their backgrounds. Overall, they choose to align themselves with Gaza. Listen to this. Privilege recognising injustice is a good thing, says Ruth Walsh. That's I like it. Privilege recognising injustice is a good thing. That's my new motto.
I think the people of Kells have been long agitating, actually, for a return of their book from Trinity.
Okay, all right. We'll take a break. Louise Bayliss, Pat Leahy, Brendan Kelly and Brenda Power staying with us.
Text 51551. Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1. Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1.
Welcome back. Our panel are still with us. Louise Bayliss, Pat Leahy, Brendan Kelly and Brenda Power. Louise, you have talked about this here before. the recycling, the bottle, what's it actually called?
The return, yeah.
The bottle, anyway, the bottles into the machine scheme. So the Mail on Sunday on page 2 have a piece, Public Angry with Minister over Recycling Plan Failures, and Ken Fox has, I think, done an FOI.
Yeah, he's done an FOI and he's got some of the emails. Now, the last time I was talking about how it was impacting on the budgets of people in emergency accommodation, where they haven't access to fresh water, children packing lunches to go to school and they have to buy the bottled water, and how 15 cent on each bottle was going to have an impact on their budgets. And the chances of a child bringing home a bottle unscathed from school, anybody who thinks otherwise, you've never put your hand in a child's school bag because you're terrified to put them in. But they've also raised the point, and I think I've heard other people saying this, you know, about people who are disabled, who are getting their shopping delivered, and because they can't actually physically go to shop, whether it's because of physical health or, you know, access to COVID or, you know, putting themselves at risk. If they get their bottles delivered or their whatever they get delivered, they're charged the deposit, but they're not able to hand it back to the delivery person and they have no way of getting it. So they have to go back. So it is just a tax on people who are the most vulnerable. And I think it goes back to the whole thing about when we design policies, we should start at how it impacts the most marginalised, i.e. people with a disability, people in emergency accommodation, rather than going what's best for the general
everything,
public.
Everything needs to be proofed for
proofed,
that.
Proofed, yeah. I think, yeah. I think we should be doing it that way rather
Brenda,
than the other way.
You were looking at this as well.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I take Louise's point about people living in direct provision and so on who need to buy bottled water.
What about the poor people at the airport as well? Apparently, you can't recycle at the airport. No.
Right. Yeah. I mean, people love a whinge, honest to God. Looking at some of the complaints here, somebody describes this as collective punishment. Again, you're sort of appropriating the language of warfare. Collective punishment. I mean, who is forcing you to buy fizzy drinks? You know, and some of the complaints here are pretty flimsy, I have to say. This is a reasonably decent initiative.
Have you used it much?
No.
Okay.
I haven't. I could keep putting them back in my green bin where they will be recycled.
Well,
what
I would say to you is that privilege recognising injustice is a good thing, Brendan Power.
But
is anyone using it?
Well, most people
let's
wouldn't.
Just take a straw poll. Hadley?
I've never used it.
Absolutely, I'm using it. I think it works very well where I use it.
Okay.
No problem.
Yeah, but this is again privilege needs to recognise injustice. You're able to go down to the shop.
Most people wouldn't stoop to pick 25 cents off the pavement, so they're not going to be bothered carrying their bottles back. I think. By and large.
I think there's
also I've heard. Of
I think there's a scheme for enterprising kids here in Boba Jobs style thing.
Is.
Remember the old Boba Job?
Again, they wouldn't thank you for 25 cents.
My son was in Berlin a couple of summers ago, and he said there was a great scheme there. Again, it was the deposit scheme. But at the end of a party or festival in a park, the people would left their cans and their tins there, and homeless people would come along in their carts and collect them, and it was an income for them. And I thought, that's quite inventive, and you know, that would work.
But also in Berlin, you do see homeless people rooting through bins all the time, looking for the bottles and dragging around huge bags of them in order to exchange them. Which is, I think, it is a little more complex.
Yeah.
But I think the scheme here in Ireland works well, as far as I've seen. And it's not really about the money; it is about the environmental impact.
Okay, Brendan, you picked Anton Savage's column in the second section of the Business Post, and it's Be Yourself, Follow Your Passion and Other Stupid Bits of Advice. So, popular psychology.
Absolutely.
Most Irish people, you say to them, be yourself, and they say, which one?
Yeah. Well, Anton Savage has a marvellous column, as usual. And he says, the only answer to be yourself is to say, thank you for that stunning insight. I was torn between being Louis XIV or Batman, but your suggestion is revolutionary. I'll abandon Batman and go with something else. He also goes on to talk about the advice, just relax, don't over-prepare, and also follow your passion, to which he responds, don't. So a very funny and a very witty column. The other piece he gets to is this piece of advice, fake it till you make it. He describes this as self-evidently moronic. Using different language, it becomes lie and say you have a skill you don't. And he asks, what could possibly go wrong? And the answer is everything.
So are you saying that all this popular psychology, all these self-help books and everything, is it all nonsense?
I'm saying everyone should simply be themselves, follow their passion and follow the stupid advice.
Of course, I know you psychiatrists, you just want to get us all on drugs, isn't it? we're reclaiming control of our mental health and saying we can fix ourselves. You're saying, no, just take the pill, you idiot. Take the pill.
No, not at all. I'm saying that we have the power to live in the moment. Once we tune into the moment, we need to be ourselves, but maybe not always follow our passions. That can lead us to some pretty strange places.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Brenda, really briefly, I know you particularly wanted to mention, you're writing about it yourself as well, Bo Donnelly today and Sextortion Seamus cases triple in a year.
Yeah, I mean, it's a bit of a downer from what we've just been speaking about, but it is a tripling of the number of reported cases of sextortion, which is cases where mostly young men are sort of lured online by women to share intimate images and are then blackmailed. And the numbers have increased threefold here in the last year and eightfold in the UK. So this is clearly a scam that is gathering pace. And again, you know, it's the scourge of smartphones. Young people, we saw last week figures suggesting that 6-year-olds, 25% of 6-year-olds in this country now have a smartphone. And a lot of parents would like to see them banned. Or else, you know what, folks, you could actually do something about it yourself and stop giving these devices to children who are simply not able to manage. I mean, we have seen suicides in this country of young people who've been sextorted, as it's called, who've been asked for money and intimate images circulated to humiliate them. And God knows how many more times that has happened since. And, you know, there is something that can be done about this.
Might the solution be not to send intimate images of yourself via your phone?
I know, that's...
Of course it is, and you know, there's...
You suggest that and then you're victim shaming.
Yeah, but the other thing is, if you say to parents as well, Brenda, don't give them a phone. You can't not give some of them a phone. This is the problem we're seeing.
Can.
If they all have, if the vast majority of them have a phone,
absolutely,
they all need to have a phone.
But I know that schools that have tried to implement bans on smartphones say, the resistance comes from parents saying, how will I contact my kids? A dumb phone? They still work.
Okay, and that's it for this hour. Thank you very much to my excellent panel today, Louise Bayliss, founder of Spark and campaign coordinator of Focus Ireland, Pat Leahy, political editor with the Irish Times, Brendan Kelly, consultant psychiatrist and professor at Trinity College Dublin, and Brenda Power, columnist with the Irish Daily Mail and the Sunday Times, and barrister. You are released to go off and enjoy your bank holiday weekend, and we will go to the newsroom and Kate Egan.